Can I ask you something? What's your family story worth to you? And I'm not talking about the shiny ones that everybody knows about. I mean the buried ones, the secrets, the heartbreaks, the ones that only slipped out after a night of too much Hennessy. That's what Vietnam Story Bank is for. No polish, no rewrites, no editing, just raw, recorded, beautiful beating history. The kind that makes you sit up and hold your breath. Your father's memories of his mother's wildest dreams, your grandparents' laughter that echoes in your bones. We dig it all up, we record it, and hand it back to you. Safe, untouchable, and unforgettable. Because when your stories disappear, they're gone forever. So go to VietnamStoryBank.com today and make sure your family's stories are recorded. We have Teresa Costanza. We are here because Teresa just experienced this deadly wildfire in Altadena. And Teresa and I go way back about 15, almost 20 years. She was in one of my early documentary projects. And Teresa, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
It was hard, but I figured I might as well, you know, share the story of Altadena and my experience with, you know, everything that's happened.
You know, I think some parts of the conversation might be difficult. And if there's any time where you need to sort of take a moment, feel free to do that. Because it probably has not all sunk in yet, because that's what you've told me before. And but if it ever gets a little too uncomfortable, just let me know. Okay.
All right.
Can you tell me a little bit about yourself and take us back to the first time and why you decided to move to Altadena?
So it was in 1997. My husband, Tony, and I were engaged, and we were looking for a house that we could, you know, like our starter home. And we were trying to find something affordable. And at the time, I was living in Pasadena, off of Hill and Colorado. So I love Pasadena. And I was at, you know, part of the parish community there, our church. I walked everywhere, you know, to PCC, the junior college, our church. I loved Old Town. So it was an exciting time, and we were looking. And so, you know, we saw several houses before that one, you know, on the listing, and that was affordable. And it kind of like, at first, I remember the drive up on Fair Oaks, right? And I was sort of like, never went up that far on Fair Oaks before. Because where I ended up, our house is about 3 miles from Old Town, Old Pasadena. And so it was sort of like I had to drive through, you know, some seedy areas of Pasadena on Fair Oaks. And I was like, where the heck am I going here? And finally, as soon as I passed Altadena Drive, all of a sudden you start seeing big trees.
Yeah.
You know, and the mountain view opened up, and then it was sort of like, wow, I had no idea it existed. And so then when I pulled up to check out the house, I was by myself at the time because it was like on my, you know, like my way to work or something. And I remember, you know, sort of like, oh, what a cute cottage. You know, it was the yellow, the same, it's always been the yellow cottage. And I remember, you know, it was someone was renting at the time, and I noticed the original hardwood floor that was still not, you know, polished. It was like it needed some help. I mean, this is a house that was built in 1926. And then the windows, and I noticed the arch, the barrel ceiling. It was like had character. And so it was, what was charming about it was, you know, I at the time didn't know much about Jane's Cottage, the whole historic village in Altadena, knew nothing about Altadena. So it was mainly a house that we could afford, and it had character. And I kind of felt, you know, like, oh, it has great, I had a great feeling about it. You know, it's like, it's sort of like you feel the spirit or something about the house, because I had been to other houses and I didn't have that same reaction. So then right away, I knew something was kind of like special that I wasn't, you know, I couldn't put my finger on it, but I it had great bones. And so I kind of fell in love with it.
What was the neighborhood like?
Back then, In 1997, it was, I mean, really, I drove around, it was unfamiliar. It was not comfortable for me. It was sort of like I wasn't sure, I mean, Altadena has evolved tremendously. And back then, we were driving everywhere. We were not walking anywhere at all like in that area. But I did know that I made an effort. I met my neighbors. Like it was like, so we moved in right after we came back from our honeymoon in December. And we had very, I just got my apartment stuff. So it was like time to prepare for Christmas. So then I remember making little bags of chocolate and as a way to introduce myself, to my neighbors, like knock on their doors. Hi, we're your new neighbor. So I did meet my neighbor to the right, to the left, across the street. And they were just very friendly, genuine, unassuming people. And so I thought, wow, these friendly neighbors. And then the more I got to know the neighbors, it's almost like one of those old neighborhoods where you can just walk over to your neighbor and say hi, or pop in and borrow, milk or eggs, or I mean, it just was so special in that way.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about the community of Altadena?
I think that if you talk to anyone, not even people who move into Altadena, like my planner, people just come, like even the plumber, like you start, they just realize, wow, you guys have it special here.
Yeah.
So now I'll just bring it up to a current, neighborhood, because ever since I got my dog Buddy, who's going to be 11 this month, I start walking, so because you don't walk, I mean, I didn't really, I went to the gym before, but now ever since I got Buddy, I start walking around the neighborhood. And that's when we realize, wow, we got to know our neighbor friends with dogs. A Buddy would pull us up to their house to like sit in the front door until they come out. It's a friendly community. Everyone says hi to everyone. No one like gets on your case about, you did this. I mean, like, how some
Yeah.
neighborhood can be really mean and selfish. This neighborhood, it's diverse. I mean, even when I was checking out that house 27 years, this neighbor two doors down noticed that I was looking, and she invited me into her backyard and sat with me and got to know me. And that's another reason why I loved it. It's like I just remember that. And now it's like we know. I mean, I knew people up and down and all around the whole track, like it was like, and we walk to the park and we see the mountain. It's almost like a hidden treasure, in many ways, because, it's not a wealthy neighborhood. Like we're in West Altadena here, and my track is like the Farnsworth Park track. I mean, it's almost like my daughters call our neighborhood, we're the hippie part of Altadena. But they love it so much because it's so diverse. We used to put our children in the local Loma Alta community center. Not is it like they built a community, I don't know, at the park. And in the summer they would have camp for and you know what? We knew people in La Cañada. They went to school there. We knew people in ice skating in Pasadena. But we purposely put our children in camp there in the summer so that they can, it's like an education. You get to know your neighbors. You get to see and feel the diversity of, we have a lot of African Americans. We have Hispanics. We have a few Asians. So we represent that. I mean, they're, interracial. But we had like whites, which is like a hodgepodge. And I just wanted them to kind of realize that we're part of this special, diverse community. And everyone is so friendly, so that they love that, And so I think that's what's so special about Altadena is it's diverse, it's eclectic. Apparently, there are a lot of creative people there. There are a lot of people from JPL, smart, intelligent, professionals. So then we just, are part of that mix.
Are there any Vietnamese people that live in Altadena?
You know what's funny is when I actually went to Altadena for the first time a long time ago when I was in college, because I was at UCLA and there was a bunch of, I was with a Vietnamese group of students and a Catholic Vietnamese, and we went to a mass at the church there at Sacred Heart on Lincoln, and there was a bigger Vietnamese community there when we went, because they still have mass in Vietnamese at that church today, but I think the population, they had moved away. I mean, they're less and less. So if I want to see Vietnamese, I would see probably go to that mass. And I did that before, but it's a smaller community. There was a little market, and it's called Bo's Market. And my husband, that was probably the closest market to our house. And we would go there and get, your basic stuff whenever. And that market has closed up. Oh, sorry,
No, it's
my
okay.
dog.
That's your dog. That's the 11-year-old dog that you talked about.
Yes, that's Buddy, and Buddy and I have experienced a lot. So I'll tell you more as we get there.
Living in Altadena, you are nestled in beautiful hills, the foothills of that big mountain range that we can see in Alhambra, the 626. Did you ever consider wildfires as a problem?
Well, we our house. I have to say it in the past tense now. We were just below the fire line. So we're like nine houses down from the fire line, which is Loma Alta Drive. And so we always felt safe in a sense that we were below, like if there's a fire, would be protected. All the fire trucks would make sure that it doesn't get past. And so north of Loma Alta, you can walk another eighth of a mile. I mean, I walk there all the time to hit the bottom of the mountain, like you hit dead end. So then we have friends north of that line, and we thought that they would be more in danger, right? Fire. I remember there was another huge fire before that. When our children, when the older one was in first grade, we had just moved to a new school in at St. Bede, and September fire broke out in the mountains. All right, and then our friend had to evacuate, right? And we didn't have to, so you saw ashes everywhere. It was horrible, smoke and everything, but we still felt safe because. We thought that they would protect us and it wouldn't pass that line. I mean, we knew, so it wasn't like we never experienced fire before. I think there was another fire more recently. I forgot. So that one was probably around 2008, 2009, maybe 2009. I mean, back then. And then, so we didn't, I don't think we ever felt like our house would burn down. Like,
Can
never.
you?
I mean, the children said, Mom, Dad, do not ever sell our house. It's like that's how attached they were. They thought they were going to inherit it. They love everything about it. They wouldn't even let us change the color of the paint when we remodeled it. We actually bought it when it was a house, a original house, three small bedrooms, one bath, a gravity feed, a Flora heater in the middle of the hall. And the three of us girls would wake up in the cold winter. And we would stand in the hallway. It's like talking about centuries ago, but this is what we remember about it was we would stand in the hallway because the heat would come up from the floor, and it was really gentle, heat. And they missed that about the old house because when we remodeled in, I think, 2017, it became central air, central heat. We added on. It was more spacious, but it's like they thought they would inherit it.
Can you walk me through the day that the fires were ravaging Altadena? Can you walk me through sort of the sequence of events? Where were you? How did you hear about all of the chaos?
Yes, so it started on Tuesday. I can't believe it seems like it's another lifetime ago. So what's today?
Today's Friday.
Okay.
So 2 weeks ago.
a week and a half ago. So Tuesday the 7th, right? Okay, we had just dropped off one daughter at Burbank Airport the day before for college, return to college. Then that day in the early afternoon, 2 o'clock, I dropped my second daughter, our older daughter, off at Burbank Airport. And of course, the wind, so we were dealing with her, boarding issues. They were delayed. Her flight was delayed. She was going to miss her connecting flight in Denver. So that was, and then I drove home and I was resuming work. I mean, I was working the entire afternoon because we were getting ready for this huge ga installation gala at the Caltech Athenaeum in Pasadena. And I was preparing for all of that. I'm their administrator, and we're doing all kinds of promotional stuff, printing. So I was all my, and then I on my phone, okay, I'm part of Beautiful Altadena Facebook group, and I think I was aware, oh, there's a fire breaking out in Eaton Canyon. And Eaton Canyon is still far away from, us, like in terms of, number of houses and, like, okay, I was aware. And then so then I was dealing with my work, my daughter's missed flight. I was trying to find her. She had to end up staying overnight, so all of that. And then I remember going upstairs in my bedroom, and my bedroom window was facing directly at the fire. Like it was, you could see the flames and you can see
Wow.
it growing. And I took a screenshot, a picture of it, and I texted my family, like my husband and two daughters. Because now they're all over there. One is in Oregon and one is now in Denver, and at a hotel, or somewhere trying to spend the night. And I said, oh shoot, there she is, speaking of the angel. So I was trying to record at 7:17, because now I'm taking screenshot of all of my texts. 7:17, I shared the picture. I said, wow, look at, you can see the Eaton Canyon, Eaton fire from our bedroom window. And that's when I started thinking, just in case, it's time to gather some important essential stuff like passport. Like I was beginning to think, okay, if we need to, because it was scary. I mean, you can see it
Wow.
growing towards us, and the wind, okay, that's the other thing, the wind factor. And I remember these communities, the fire would just consume an entire community like in a heartbeat. So I was like, I was aware. So then I start packing, and then I start packing photos, and I was thinking, okay, what photos don't we have in memory in the computer store somewhere in the on our phone or in computer. So then I pulled out the old albums. And I first I start with bags, and then I was like, oh, stop at me, a roller. So I filled a roller, a carry-on full of albums. And then I looked at my daughters and I say, okay, we need to pause the evacuation. So what important things do you want me to take from your bedrooms? They had no idea what I was talking about. They're like, I didn't get much. Okay. Christina did say a necklace with her mom, her grandmother's ashes in it, like one of those pendant or one of those. So then I got some of that. I did put a handful of my own personal jewelry, like my little jewelry box in a bag, Tony's little coin collection in his nightstand. So basically stuff in our nightstand, our laptop, our phone, essential things like that. We didn't even pack, we only packed like for me, like 2 days, two pair of jeans and t-shirts and one pair, wearing what I was wearing. And we just thought, oh, well, we'll be back. Like we're just gonna check in case things that, we need documents and things like that. So we didn't even fill our trunks. Our daughters are so upset at us because we I had but from 7:17 to the time that we actually left the house, because at first we just thought, let's just pack the car, face outward, on the street, so we can just roll down the hill so that there wouldn't be any problem getting out, We didn't want to be trapped. But then once we did that, Tony was like determined, I thought we could just still hang out because they didn't evacuate us yet. It was more like be ready. So around 10 o'clock-ish, we were trying to turn off the gas. Tony and I were with the flashlight outside. We're like, shoot, Why didn't we thought that there was a wrench in there. We didn't quite know how to turn off the gas, and we weren't sure. So, but that was like, I recorded that because I was texting my neighbor because she knew everything. I'm like, are you guys there? Like, do you know how, do you have a wrench we can borrow to turn off? Do you know how to turn off the gas? And so this is all recorded on my text. And so once we did that, Tony's like, we have to go. Let's go now. He made it urgent. He's like, now. I was like, Tony, like I was still thinking there's stuff, you know, we have a hope chest that it was in my closet that we like a traditional hope chest from the time that we got engaged that we would just put memorabilia, you know, stuff that we want to keep safe. And I didn't even touch it. I mean, we didn't pack his mom's, which she bequeathed to Tony, her wedding album. We didn't, I brought albums that my dad gave me from Vietnam, like pictures of my family from the last time that we fled, you know, that's another lifetime. And then that's it. I mean, I didn't, like, I looked at the family portrait hanging on the wall, and for a split second, I thought of taking it. And I thought, oh, that's too big. Well, you know, it's just too cumbersome. We have the photo in the phone somewhere, you know, like, and then I thought of things, but I didn't take them because, you know, it's almost like you don't want to, like, I didn't want to just pile on. You know what I'm saying? I just thought, okay, we'll be back. It's not the end of the world. You know, we have these things. And then we drove two cars. I tell me, cut me off because I can keep talking, you know, because it's just like the reel of a video, you know? So we met up in at Rockle's Tavern in Old Pasadena, because that was like a good meeting place. We know we watched football games, and it was like surreal, you know, with the wind blowing. There was debris everywhere, and not a lot of people out at all. And the place was closed. It was like, so I mean, it was like 10-ish, and then we thought, okay, go south. So we drove all the way down. We thought, and I'm like, okay, let's go to this hotel. So we met up at that hotel in Alhambra on Main Street. And it was full, you know, parking, no parking at all. So then that's when I saw the text from my brothers in Orange County. They're like barely aware, and they're like, Teresa, just come down. Like, we have a place for you, you know, because my dad and my brothers are all down in Orange County, and that's sort of like the family headquarters. And then when I told Tony from window to window, you know, his car and my car, and when he thought I was, he's like, thinking that he had to go to work the next day because he was still in trial. And he works at the San Bernardino Rancho Cucamonga courthouse. So he thought, I'm just going to get a whole motel in Rancho Cucamonga, you know. And so we thought, okay, we would meet up the next day. Well, my brothers, once they found out I had a dog, see, they never really knew my dog. And, you know, not every household can handle having a dog. His wife, one of them, his wife has a phobia. So it turns out that I, you know, didn't want, you know, it's like, okay, I didn't want my dog to, you know what I'm saying? Like, we needed to find a dog-friendly place. So then I ended up with Buddy in our in the Jeep in the street because I didn't know where else to go. I didn't want to impose anybody. And I just thought, well, you know, it's okay. I have Buddy with me. And then we just basically, I just thought at the moment, I was like, this is what it feels like to be homeless, you know, living in the car. And then we were trying to find a safe place to kind of like just park and sleep. I was up all night. I ended up in from there to this in nearby this church. So we went from church to church in South Pasadena, Holy Family, but the street just, you know, too noisy. And then Buddy was like my blanket because, you know, I just had what I was wearing, and then he was on my lap. And then we went I drove to La Cañada because I thought, okay, you know, it's away from the smoke, it's safe. Because I'm very familiar with La Cañada on Foothill. So we pulled up in the parking lot of HomeGoods, and you can see the fire from there because it's on a hill. And you can see, oh my gosh. I mean, the smoke was, you know, so I parked there all night trying to just feel safe. And in the early mornings, people were beginning to pull up. Maybe they were kind of like doing the same thing, like it was still dark. And then I remember driving all along La Cañada, finally waited for a Ralph's to open up to go to the restroom. And I did text my neighbor because, and then found out at around 4 o'clock that they were at the Rose Bowl. So then I ended up meeting them up at the Rose Bowl. That's our experience of that day. And then, shoot, my dog's calling. Hold on 1 second. Then my friend, so we had texts coming in. And then I have a lifelong friend from high school. She lives in Anaheim Hills. And so she said, come over, come over. We have a dog. We're dog friendly. They're empty nesters. So then I ended up get going, from in the morning. By the time I got there, it was probably around 10, 11. And I was just like, I need to sleep. So I crashed there and was kind of like sheltered for like 2 nights there. That's when I, the following day, the following 2 days, find out, the fate of our home.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes, I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for.
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
How did you find out about your home?
So I was trying to look back. Wednesday in Anaheim Hills, you wouldn't even know that there was a fire unless you follow the news. But I'm looking at the pictures of the screens here. Hold on, I didn't have enough all the time, but hold on 1 second.
Yeah, Anaheim Hills, for everybody who's listening, is probably about a good 45 minutes to an
About
hour away.
more than an hour. So while I was there, after I woke up that afternoon, I was trying to find out, because now I had left the area. So then around the afternoon, I think one of my neighbors said that she found out that a house burned down just south of us. I mean, so that's further south. So I was like, uh-oh, how did it get south of us? And then I texted my neighbor just north of me, like next door, and I asked her, because I found out she was safe in Pasadena, so she's nearby. And I asked her if she had any news, because of our house, because I was like right next to her. And that's when she said that her friend told her. She said, "I'm so sorry to say that our friend let us know that everything is gone. Apparently, pretty much everything from Loma Alta down. This is so surreal. Hope you are all safe."
My
So
God.
that was the first piece of news, and I didn't believe it. Like I was like thinking, well, maybe my house is still, just by chance. I was like, I still had a little hope. And then another the neighbor up north, her husband went snuck in somehow. They got through side streets, and because I guess my brother-in-law was trying to go up and he couldn't. So she texted me at 10:20 p.m. to send her condolences.
Oh my God.
And she said, "I'm so sorry," and I just didn't believe it, right? She was basically pouring her heart out because she knew that our oh hi Teresa, I'm so sorry and heartbroken of your loss of your house. Such devastating time. We pray for you that you will come through this with your faith and God provides everything you need. And so she was talking like she knew, and I called her. I mean, 10 p.m. I called her. I said, "How do you know? Do you have a picture? I want to see, did you take pictures?" She said, "Yeah, Sarah took pictures." I said, please text me a picture of my house. And she didn't want me to because she was afraid that I would be, you know, in pieces. I said, Jane, I want to know. I need to know. So then it must have, she texted me Thursday. Okay, this is when it hit me with the picture. She texted me the photo of my house at 12:04 p.m. on Thursday. And that was like, okay, now I know. So that was, you know, and then I haven't been back. So I'm like, okay, we have proof that our house is gone, because you can tell the only thing left, I don't know, you have the picture, or all the concrete stuff, the pavers, the driveway, so you can know that. And then there's an arch on our front porch that you can tell that was our house, you know, the arch, the steps, the pavers, the long driveway, the tree. I was shocked that the trees were still standing. Like, there's a big tree in the back. I thought it would be gone. But you can tell that that's our house because of these, you know, landmarks of the house. So then I texted my family, because my two daughters are in two separate states. I called a family FaceTime meeting for 5 p.m. for Thursday evening so that we could break the news to them without shocking them, you know, to try to put a positive spin. And that's when Tony and I were separated in two different places. He ended up going to his brother's, but so we talked first. And that's when I found out, okay, the reason why Tony and I lost communication, because his phone died that night. So make sure your phone's always charged, right? Bring the charger in case of emergency, extra battery. So I found out that I thought Tony was in the motel in Rancho Cucamonga, because I thought that's the last thing he told me. But he said later, once we reconnected on, you know, the phone, and I was in Anaheim, he said he actually ended up driving back to our house that night. And he parked across the street until, you know, just keep watch until he absolutely had to leave. And he said he left because the smoke was just overwhelming, like there was no way you could be there anymore. He, at around 2-ish, he left. And he said he actually saw a house on our street, several, you know, down, further down, a block or two down, that was burning down. So we called the girls at 5 p.m. And you know what? Our children, college students, who were so attached to the house, we thought, we just didn't want to break the news, but we felt like they want to know. And they had already heard about things through their social network. Her best friend from childhood, preschool, in Altadena, it's almost like her sister, of sort, her house burnt down. So they already knew, but you know, they were hoping, right? So we had to let them know. And so when we were on the FaceTime, before I showed them the picture, we were like, okay, so just when, you know, we want to let you know. So we told them, you know, our house burned down. And they reacted the same way I did. They're like, Mom, text us the photo. And then Tony, so I was like, are you ready? You know, so they just text us the photo. So then pause. I was trying to look at the photo, you know, how they reacted. And they were spinning the way that I was, you know. It wasn't like there was no tears. It was, we still, you know, I mean, it was like, okay. And then Tony and I kept talking. We're like, he's like, here's an opportunity for us to, you girls can help Mom redesign your dream house. You know, we can do this and we can do that. And so, you know, I think we're all still trying to process.
Yeah. Yeah. What is the process now of rebuilding?
Well, you know, I'm part of this beautiful Altadena. We all like follow each other, read news about what's going on. And Altadena, and that's the other thing about us. I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but there is a very strong bond even before the fire. And it's because we all felt so blessed and privileged to live there. And like, it's almost like, oh, it's a secret, you know. And but, you know, families were beginning to move in. You have families with young kids. They Farnsworth has this brand new park for families, and it's just bursting with life. And, you know, we have people walking every day with their dogs and greeting one another, you know, talking. And so there's a strong bond that, you know, we're all going to stick together, and we're going to rebuild, and we're going to, you know, re-envision. There's this whole, what is it, retro vintage Altadena, you know, because it is a neighborhood of that's 100 years old, right? In fact, the Jane's Cottages, so, okay, a little history. This year is supposed to be the year we celebrate the centennial of the Jane's Village, which is was designated as a historic district in Altadena, where all these homes built by E.B. Jane's, who was the original developer, builder. It was almost, I mean, I remember reading in the history book of Altadena that he was like the first developer, you know. It was like the first tract homes in Los Angeles.
Right.
But they were all variations on this cottage theme, you know, and every house had a different thing and, you know, different colors, different. And I mean, people loved Altadena because it was not, you know, like a tract housing development. It was unique, you know. Other house designs, architectural style came in later, but originally it was the cottage. And Adam Schiff back then in 19, I don't know, I guess it was, so it was going to be, I guess if it's going to be centennial, and I forget when it became a historic district, but Tony and I attended the ribbon cutting ceremony when Adam Schiff was our representative at the time. So it was supposed to be a centennial. So it's almost like now it's going to be like envisioning the next centennial, you know, instead of celebrating the centennial, it's almost like the funeral.
Yeah. That is a very surreal thought on the 100th year anniversary of Altadena. I didn't know that.
Of the
Jane track. Yeah. The
Jane. Yeah, when it cottage. Was like, so it, you know, and there's a whole historic society, and they were inviting Altadenans to be part of the planning. And I received the postcard and I thought, oh, I want to, you know, go to one of these meetings and get involved. So, and our house is not in the historic district because we are probably the last, it was probably might have been the last year that they built. I think they had planned to expand it, but we're outside of the historic district. But when I got interested as a resident way back, I submitted our address, and that it's on there as a, you know, not a confirmed, but it's like we are considered a Jane's Cottage.
Wow. And so how long is this going to take you to get it all rebuilt?
Okay, so I talked to friends who want to help, and they're a real estate agent. I talked to my, you know, he did our plans for us. It looks like 3 years is a number that has been thrown around. Yeah. And we were thinking, you know what, this is not like a rebuild of one house that burned down. It's an entire
neighborhood,
community. And now, you know, the infrastructure's gone, you know, now they're going to have to like, because, you know, the power line, you know, would probably need to be fireproof. They were talking about underground or however they do it, you know, because there's a huge proof or some kind of development that it started from a line that fell, yeah, an active line. And so, I mean, I'm thinking we're being conservative. I want to be conservative. I'm thinking 3 to 4 years.
What do you do during those 3 to 4 years? Where do you live? How do you occupy, you know, where do you move? Where do you, like, what's the deal?
I know everyone has to, you know, plan for their, like, we're all going through this together right now. And it's separately, like, you know, right now we're trying to apply for everything, right? FEMA, met with our insurance company, State Farm, to see how much we have to last until, you know, then. So then we need to rent, where are we going to rent? You know, I mean, and in the meantime, we're overwhelmed. That's the other thing that we can discuss is the response by the larger community to, you know, all of us, is also overwhelming, in a great, beautiful way. So back to answer your question. So the plan is that we're going to stay. We're Altadenans, you know, and I went to a Zoom meeting, like, while I was in with my friends. So, like, the second day, or the Friday, last Friday, that if you want to recoup, you know, everything as much as possible, you know, to maximize, you do not sell, you know, you do not sell, because right now it's just land, right? So we're going to stay. And I think everyone's going to, you know, band together to try to be like a grassroots community base, to fight whatever fight, you know, and do this together. So we're part of that. So we're not going to, in the meantime, we need to find, you know, temporary or semi-permanent, I don't know, for the next 3-4 years. And we're still nomads right now. We want to make our rent money last. So right now we're staying at friends, and they're saying, they're so generous, you know, we're in La Crescenta, they're like, stay as long as you need. So we don't feel, you know, we feel like, because of all these, the goodness, the goodwill, the help and resources, I'm still feeling the blessings. I'm not feeling the desolation yet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We're not alone. We're not alone. We're one of thousands of people. Like, it's, you know, Kenneth, you and I go back when we were talking about being refugees from, yes, Vietnam. Okay. So now I'm in that, like, this is a 50. Okay. Mind you, another round number. We're going to hit that 50 year mark.
And you're in it again.
Yes. So that, for me, this is a second round of being a refugee, in that sort of being kind of like, you know, a loss of home and life in what, you know, was stable, and what was for our children. They're now experiencing what I experienced the first time in terms of losing home, community. And I think we need to go through that process. I mean, I'm bracing myself to grieve, right? Like, I'm still, like, trying to survive right now. You know how when we fled Vietnam, we were trying to survive. We were trying to just gather whoever's left and receive help and just be open to whatever comes your way. And so what are we going to do? We're going to maximize whatever comes, goodness comes our way, offers. We're not proud, in a sense that we receive gratefully. And we have friends, you know, come and stay with us. We got hotel vouchers. We have Airbnb. We got, you know, we applied for everything. So I think Tony and I are trying to figure out, you know, okay, where do we want to be in the next 3-4 years? And so we haven't quite answered that question yet.
Do you think that, wait, how old were you in 1975 when your family evacuated?
8.
You were 8. Do you think that subconsciously sort of, because when I reached out to you, you were very, I didn't feel the shell shock. I didn't feel the punch. And I felt like you were very in control sort of your emotions. And you still seem to be, you know, very grounded with this. And I can't help but to think that leaving at 8 years old, leaving everything behind, that's always stuck in the back of your mind. And now going through this, I mean, this is life-changing devastation, but you seem to be sort of like mentally kind of like above it and able to kind of traverse this.
Well, I think that you have a broader perspective of life. once you experience tremendous loss. And I think, I don't know, I'm sure you probably didn't remember this, but you interviewed me about, you know, being a refugee and the experience of coming to the US and all that. And, you know, back then it was, I was a child, right? So it, for me, I thought, oh, maybe because I was a child and it was an adventure. You know, I'm sure my parents were, you know, thinking of life and death matters. And I thought, oh, wow, we get to go to America. And we were camping in Guam and we were camping in, you know, at Camp Pendleton. And, you know, so, but of course, I became an adult and looked back, and we still, you know, talk about the history, and each year, the anniversary on April 30th, you know, digest it more and connecting more and picking up pieces. But I think I said in that interview that what hurt me more, what was a blow more, was not loss of country, home, all that. It was the loss of my mother 3 years after we arrived. So 1978. For me, losing things and even country and even, you know, wealth or, you know, whatever you own or have, if you're all together, like we were intact as a family, it was okay.
Yeah.
We had each other. And so, same thing here. Maybe that's why. And of course, I think our faith, you know, I don't feel like I'm alone in this. So it's not, woe am I. We are, like, now I see us. And, you know, if you're like reference to the Bible, we are like the, you know, fleeing Egypt. And yeah, we're now in the desert. You know, every time you have an exodus of some sort, you know, the experience of exodus, and that you're now in liminal space and time, and you're journeying with others in the desert. So that's where we are. But we feel, I'm sorry, this is part of who I am. We feel that God is near us.
Yeah.
And we feel that we are not forsaken. Even though I'm sure moments out to demons, we feel forsaken.
Yeah.
But I have faith that we will be okay, because thank God, I mean, there are lives lost. So I don't, you know, I want to maybe even take a pause to, you know, think about families who've lost lives. And that's the biggest loss. Lives.
Yeah. You know, Teresa, I know that this right now you have all the help, or you have some help with different applications that you've applied for, but I can only imagine in a year from now, it gets a little bit harder as you're renting, as you're trying to put your life together. Is there any way that our community can pitch in? Is there a link that we can leave in the description for people to donate and help? Because you said you're not proud, and I just want to make sure that we can somehow, you know, offer that.
You know, this is the other thing, is it's probably part of us, our family, our children, trying to do something about it. You know what I'm saying? Like, be in active mode.
Yeah.
Rather than getting depressed and, you know, and be isolated. So once we were in that, you know, once we found out and all that stuff, Tony's friend, colleague, and he, my husband, he was separated from me at the time physically, and they were working on, and he is not at all, I'm like, he's like a dinosaur. He is not techie at all. So she helped him, his colleague, supervisor, she helped him put together, create a GoFundMe a campaign, a fundraiser, and I've never done it before either. Julie set it up, and so we do have a GoFundMe. And our daughter, as soon as they got that, you know, there's the social media kicked in. So we do have that, and we are so grateful. I can't believe the responses, because, you know, this is where it's effective because we're receiving help and donations, even $15, you know, from anonymous, from names I don't even recognize. So because it, you know, friends of friends, you know, please share our GoFundMe account. I don't know. You have that?
Yeah, I'll get it. If you can send that to me, and I'll attach that into the link in the description. So I'll include the GoFundMe, and, you know, audience, whoever's listening and watching right now, like I said, I don't think that it's kicked in entirely for you yet, but in the next year to 3 years, I think having all the sort of help financially to go through the next few years is going to be a very important thing. And there's not very many Vietnamese people that I've heard in your situation or in the Palisades, which are the two biggest areas in LA that's been affected. But if I do know of any other Vietnamese people who've been affected, I would actually, you know, help and interview as the same. But because you're the only Vietnamese person that I know that is going through this, I would love for my audience to kind of help and chip in and donate. So we'll include the link.
And my oldest brother, Ha, he is a social butterfly. He, you know, so all I can say is we met at my dad's house on Sunday, and it turns out that, you know, it's a small world. And sometimes we know the same people that we don't know, you know. Yeah. It turns out he knows. So if someone knows me by chance through this, please reach out and text me. And I would love to connect, you know, because it's like you rediscover each other through crises, you know. And I have people texting me. Thank God I'd never delete people from my contact. Even people that I didn't consider as friends, there are people that I was still trying to forgive, you know, like, so they were not like, they texted me. They prayed for me, or they show concern, they donated. So it's almost like if there's any great, you know, things, blessings, silver lining out of all this is the reconnection and connection of people, of humans, and, you know,
humanity is still very good.
Humanity, the spirit of the human spirit.
And the Vietnamese community.
Yes, so please, if you know me from high school or from my brother's, you know, network or whatever, please feel free to reach out to me. I wouldn't, you know, I don't know. You can share my phone number.
Okay. Well, yeah. You want to read your phone number now?
Sure. It's 626-590-8828. 626-590-8828. Text me, let me know who you are, and I would love to connect with you.
Teresa, thank you so much for opening up your heart and your experience with me today on the podcast. And we will include all the pertinent information, your email, your phone number again, and the GoFundMe link. Thank you so much, Teresa.
Thank you, Kenneth.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.